I want to use my time on the panel to make some links between the so-called anti-globalization or anti-corporate movement, what we saw in Quebec City and Seattle and Windsor, what we're going to see in Genoa and Italy against the G8, and OCAP's upcoming economic disruption campaign. I'm going to be making some links, but while I do so, I think the basics are quite clear. Clarice, Stefan have touched on them. Those basics are community-based organizing that's based in our neighborhoods. We have to get beyond ritual and symbolism, and the idea that power can't be charmed or persuaded into changing. It must be disrupted, it must be confronted head on. I mean, those are the basics, but I want to sort of apply those basics to this link, or make a link between the anti-globalization, so-called anti-globalization movement and the upcoming disruption campaign. To do so, I guess what I want to do is maybe evaluate very quickly these large-scale mobilizations. On one level, as Stefan was pointing out, they're really positive. People who've attended these large-scale protests have come away very empowered. They've become very, very important, empowering collective experiences. They've opened up a sense of possibility. People are asking some very basic questions about how we organize and what do we want. It's forced people to confront and reckon with a more complex understanding of the world and getting beyond this idea that we're against bad things and we're for good things. We have to start naming names and getting very specific about what we oppose and what we want. And that kind of complex understanding happens in the course of struggle. And I think tactically, street actions, disruptions, these shutdowns, the tactics that are happening on the ground are a clear break with prevailing authority, with a prevailing consensus of lobbying these institutions, which again is a good thing. And I think we've seen a crisis of legitimacy of a variety of institutions, like the WTO or the World Bank, and as well a crisis of functioning. They have to start running away and meet at places like Qatar, which is where the next World Trade Organization meeting is going to be held. The next G8 meeting is supposed to be held in Ottawa, but the Quebec government is seriously considering moving it to a ski resort, either Banff or Whistler or Jasper, so much more easier to cut off protesters. The Montreal Gazette even went so far as to write an editorial saying, why don't we have these conferences meet by video conference, and that way you don't have to deal with protest. And another thing about this anti-globalization movement is it's been sustained. We can now evaluate it, I guess, 2 years after Seattle. It's been sustained, almost farcically so, where any time corporate elites, various trade accords try to be negotiated, there's a massive confrontation. Even in Whistler this summer, so July in Whistler, there are people going to be confronting a local, regional economic bloc, which is quite impressive. But all is not well. It's never been well. I think there are critiques and problems to be underlined. I have a lot of them, but I guess the one I want to touch on today is the disjunction, the gap between sites of struggle, sites of resistance, day-to-day resistance, like in Aboriginal communities, in communities of color, in poor communities, a gap between that and these large-scale protests. That is, these large-scale protests lack a link to community resistance. This has been expressed quite nicely by a thinker in the United States called Jay Sakai, and he said this, and he was referring to his context, which is New York City. He wrote the following: was it the WTO which placed a major sewage treatment plant right in Harlem, knowingly pushing up air pollution levels just as an epidemic of black and Latin childhood asthma was starting? No, that criminal act was committed by our very own local capitalism. But for New York City anti-WTO protesters, it might be that Seattle is much closer than Harlem, if you know what I mean. And I guess we can ask the same questions. For a lot of anti-FTAA or anti-WTO protesters in Toronto, Quebec City or Seattle is a whole lot closer than, say, Regent Park or Akwesasne or Walkerton, if you know what I mean. So I think that's the gap that has to be addressed, and that's a very real gap that exists. Sakai goes on to state, was it the WTO that has killed and is killing thousands of Navajos by radioactive uranium ore waste poisoning? No, that was the so-called democratic U.S. government. Is it the WTO or the FTAA, which is perpetuating genocide against Native peoples in Canada for 200, 300, 400 years? No, that's our very own democratic Ontario and Canadian governments. So while these summits are being chased to Qatar or to Banff, if people want to go there, and while I think there's a crisis of legitimacy and a crisis of functioning, the fact is capitalism is alive and well, as alive and well as it's ever been, despite these large-scale mobilizations. And I think what we're doing is maybe losing the forest from the trees. One aspect of globalization that is quite often underlined and targeted is the so-called structural adjustment program, SAPs, that the IMF and World Bank imposes on a variety of countries. What are structural adjustment programs? Well, they are cuts to subsidies, to fuel, and to food in a variety of countries, the privatization of wide areas of wide sectors of government, cuts to social spending, creating competitive practices by ensuring flexible labor or getting rid of a variety of standards. Those are structural adjustment programs. These are imposed on countries such as Indonesia or Mexico. Well, Ontario has had its very own structural adjustment program, but unlike the other structural adjustment programs, they're not enforced. They're voluntarily undertaken by our governments. Our structural adjustment program is called the Common Sense Revolution, and it does exactly the same thing. Now, sociologists have attributed a certain phenomena, or have underlined a certain phenomena called the IMF riot. These were very common in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. That is, when these kinds of massive cuts to social programs, when this kind of misery is created in order to ensure a competitive environment, people react, people riot. And there were widespread IMF riots in the 80s and the 70s. And in many ways, these riots were understood and respected by people observing them, because they understood that that's what happens when you do this to people. I think in Ontario, we had our very own little IMF riot last June 15th. And it was justified, and it was a reaction to these kind of cuts. And I think when anti-globalization activists or observers are looking at what's happening in the South, in Indonesia and Mexico, and people reacting to these kind of cutbacks, I think we should start using that kind of analysis here in terms of what Harris is doing here. So what are some lessons that we have to learn? Well, we have to start naming names and taking down addresses and being very specific about what we're opposing, get away from the abstract. So what are the names? Well, we have Harris and Flaherty and Clements, Sabucci, Stockwell, Fantino, Lastman, Frank Stronach. You can go on and on and on. And I'm sure we can do a brainstorming of who these names are and who are these people implementing this agenda. You want to name a name? Yeah. Who? Kretschen, sure. I was sticking to Ontario. In terms of naming addresses, well, the Stock Exchange, Anderson Consulting's offices, Queen's Park, and I know people here can go on and on about what those things are and what those addresses are. So there are sites of struggle. They're in our neighborhoods, they're on reserves, they're in factories, they're in schools, they're in the streets, and people in the anti-globalization movement have talked about bridging this gap. Well, bridging this gap is not about getting people involved in those sites of struggle to come to Quebec, or to go to Washington, or to go to New York City for a Wall Street action. It's for people involved in those movements to act in a spirit of respect and solidarity with those struggles that already exist. Those sites of struggle exist, and those sites of struggle are against globalization. The Common Sense Revolution is all about capitalist globalization. Another lesson, this is something that Clarice was referring to, is that we shouldn't shy away from radical ideas and radical politics, that they provide a reference point from which people can respond to and act with. In Quebec City, for example, it wasn't considered a mainstream idea to try to disrupt the summit or to attack the fence or to talk about anti-capitalism and to say it's a waste of time to try to even sit down with these ministers and discuss what kind of FTAA we want. And while that was not a mainstream idea, it did gain grudgingly the respect of a lot of rank-and-file unionists and a lot of common people. And I don't think we should shy away from that. That means having a clear radical analysis, and that means talking about respecting diverse ways of opposition, diverse ways of responding to this agenda, what we called in the CLAC a respect for diversity of tactics. I think the fact that these conferences, these large world conferences like the WTO or the G8 are moving to places like Qatar or Banff, that is, places that aren't easily accessible to us, are a blessing in disguise, or actually just a blessing, period. They force us to be really strategic and to think about those things that we always are supposed to think about, like long-term goals and local organizing. And what does that mean if you're sitting in Toronto or in Montreal? Well, we have to raise the social costs. That's what economic disruption is all about. When it's in our community, it's no longer symbolic anymore. It's tangible. It's real. It's about what's happening around us. In CLAC, we were evaluating our campaign against in Quebec City, and we were saying, so what are we beyond opposing a summit? Well, we talked about those issues that we were trying to address, like social housing. There's a crisis now of housing in Montreal. On July 1st, a lot of people move out, and there were literally hundreds and hundreds of families that had nowhere to move to because housing prices are being raised, and a lot of the housing that is available is just substandard. You couldn't live there. We talked about support for immigrants and refugees, particularly Malca Salvador, a Filipina nanny, a domestic worker who was under threat of deportation. We talked about campaigns around police brutality, campaigns around public spaces. That is tangible reality to us locally. And yes, CLAC has come out and supported OCAP's economic disruption campaign, even though the last time I checked, Montreal wasn't in Ontario. You might recall there was a slogan during the last referendum, the Charlottetown referendum, which is my Canada includes Quebec. Well, for the time being, my Quebec includes Ontario. And when I was in Vancouver, a lot of people felt that way as well, because the battle here is felt all over Canada. In many ways, Harris is the avant-garde of imposing a very specific type of capitalist globalization. And there's absolutely no contradiction of Montrealers and people in Vancouver and elsewhere coming out in support of this campaign. I guess I want to end with an anecdote about Quebec City, and I'm not going to talk about April 2001, but actually a whole month before. Sean from OCAP likes to say that the action is in the organizing. That is, it's not so much what happens that day, October 16th, April 20th, or whatever day you want to pick where there's been a large-scale mobilization. It's building up to that, and the links you're making, and the consciousness you're creating. And that really came home to me a month before when I was here in Toronto and I attended an event by the Mobilization for Global Justice. Actually, it wasn't an event. It was more of a logistics meeting to get ready for Quebec City. And I was astounded by the level of organizing that was going on. Literally, I'm not sure how many buses went eventually, but the amount of people involved, it was almost like a military operation. And it was really impressive, and it was a great thing. But I thought to myself, what if that energy, those resources, that level of organization was applied here? $1,000 or $2,000 to pay for a bus to Quebec City is one thing. $1,000 or $2,000 invested in a local struggle, which has just as much impact and is just as meaningful to people worldwide, I'd say. What if that was to happen? And I guess it's with that that I'll end. I think that's the challenge before us. Again, to go back to the basics, it's about being in our community, it's about getting beyond ritual and symbolism, it's about realizing that power can't be charmed or persuaded into changing, and as Stefan said, it's about fighting to win. Thank you.